And for United Healthcare, the privatization of Social Security, we're seeing all these ads about open enrollment the past few weeks. What are you urging in terms of the government's use of this privatization of Medicare?
Well, we must stop the government from turning over Medicare to companies like United Healthcare through privatization schemes like Medicare Advantage. And we've also got to get policymakers to take the claims review process, the appeals process, out of the hands of corporations like this and get our healthcare focused on people's needs and not corporate profit.
Well, we'll leave it there for now, but of course, we'll continue to cover this issue. We're going to do a part two with the two of you. We hope you can both stay to talk about where you're directing your efforts now as we move into the Trump administration part two. Derek Crowe with People's Action Institute speaking to us from Washington, D.C., and Wendell Potter, former executive for the health insurance companies Cigna and Humana. He's executive editor of Healthcare Uncovered and author of the books Deadly Spin, an insurance company insider speaks out on how corporate PR is killing healthcare and deceiving Americans, and also the book Nation on the Take, how big money corrupts our democracy and what we can do about it. This is Democracy Now. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kbu.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214 to contribute to KBOO's $75,000 goal for our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, going now until December 31st.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO. In accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kbu.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Meetings are held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kbu.fm. Please visit our website to verify that a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. It's just after 8 a.m. on a Tuesday morning. It's time for Too Much Information with your two hosts, Tracy Simmons and Abe Proctor. Stay tuned.
Good morning and welcome to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM on this foggy and chilly winter morning. My name is Abe Proctor, and joining me as she does every week, Tracy Simmons.
Good morning, Abe. Good morning, listeners.
We're going to tackle an issue today that you've most likely seen or heard in the news of late. The murder of a healthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, chief executive officer of United Healthcare, was murdered on the streets of Manhattan en route to a shareholders meeting. It's an unusual murder in many respects, but perhaps Tracy would make it even more unusual is the dialogue, the exchange that it has tipped off in its wake. It's people are having some feelings about this particular murder?
Oh, yeah. Lots of feelings. Feelings abound. And, you know, I think my question that I want to flesh out and pose to you as the listeners, right, a lot of people did not express sadness over the death of this person. Now, for me, right, like, human lives are important. Humans and other living beings are all, you know, equally valuable in the world. In this case, though, the outpouring of, you know, emotion was anger. And so I want to know, you know, as we think about this person who now is supposedly in custody, but before they were in custody, there were a lot of folks saying, like, this is the hero. This is, like, this is what we've needed, right, to shock the system. Hero or something else? Like, what do you think about this particular moment in time, especially on the heels of, you know, the former guy being reelected presumptively, and running a campaign of getting rid of Medicare and Medicaid and dismantling the Affordable Care Act and taking away people's rights and abilities to be healthy? What is this moment in time? And is this particular situation going to be a lightning rod of some sort? So that's the question. We'll unpack more today, but please, if you're interested in joining the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear from you. Just your take on this whole situation as we begin to really pick it apart.
Yes, indeed. A little more background. The suspect taken into custody yesterday in Pennsylvania is 26-year-old Luigi Mangione. He is the scion of a wealthy Maryland real estate family, graduate of the Ivy League, and a tech professional by trade. He was arrested in possession of a so-called ghost gun, which is a 3D printed weapon with a silencer, also 3D printed. These sorts of weapons have been the source of a great deal of controversy because they are cheap and easy to produce, and their designs are readily available on the internet if you know where to look. The Biden administration took action early in his term to try and curb the availability of these weapons, but they remain available again to people who know where to look. In addition to the weapons that were found on Mr. Mangione was a manifesto describing his motives behind the murder of Mr. Thompson and going into some detail about his own personal experiences with the American healthcare system and in particular those of his mother. I do apologize for any strife and trauma, but it had to be done. I read his manifesto. These parasites had it coming. There's a lot to unpack there, Tracy, and it all goes straight to the core of why there's such frustration about the insufficient way in which healthcare is provided to citizens in the United States. And this, I think there can be no doubt, is at the heart of the outpouring of anger against not Mr. Mangione for committing this act, but against the healthcare industry. Which was the target of his rage, and also, it appears, the rage of millions of Americans. The United States, as we all know, commoditizes your health. Your health and well-being are most definitely for sale. If you are not in a position to buy it, there is a great chance that you will not have it. This is in striking contrast to every other wealthy and developed nation in the world who have all managed to provide universal health care for all of their citizens, and also to anybody who happens to be visiting those countries. Now, you will hear people defend the healthcare system in this country by claiming that it is the best in the world, pointing at the incredibly sophisticated techniques and technology that have been developed to support the system here. But the bottom line is that, as according to the Associated Press, the United States was ranked 49th in life expectancy in the world as of 2022, and that is expected to drop to 66th in the world by 2050. Why? Because your health is for sale in this country. So it's no surprise, Tracy, that people are angry.
No surprise at all. And, you know, what's interesting is we're out 17 years from the film Sicko, produced and starring Michael Moore, that aired, came out in 2007, which really helped give us a good look at the difference of our system and the harm that the system itself causes. However, we haven't done any work because of the corporate and moneyed interest and lobbying that's, you know, happening in these spaces outside of our view, where the people who are making the most money off of your sickness and keeping you sick, frankly, are playing politics and buying politicians and using their capital to continue the system as it is. And so while we see the CEO's death as, you know, not a good thing. I don't think anyone's death and murder is a good thing. But it's also like, wait, are we going to wake up to this? Right? 17 years later, we're still talking about the same thing. We had the whole, Bernie and, you know, the left really coming forward with this idea that everyone should get health care. And literally those ideologies have been tamped down over and over again. Where are we at in this country at this moment? Are we at the point where we want to say, no more, you're not doing this anymore? I think also, right, when we think about this particular person and how quickly we have a suspect apprehended, we also have to talk about the justice system and how the justice system works differently for very rich people who are harmed. Right? Like, the actual solvent rate of murders in this country is abysmal. But somehow, right, like a week later, we've got the guy. So there's lots to unpack here for sure. And, you know, when I think about this particular person, Luigi Mangione, and his manifesto and some of what people have come forward to say about him. His grandmother was denied health care. He had some kind of very traumatic back surgery, right? When people engage with these systems that they believe are beneficial and benevolent, and they have a completely different experience, whether that's medical debt, medical bankruptcy, being denied for pre-existing conditions, being told, we can't give you this, we can give you that, and whatever that is isn't the best quality because of someone's tiered health insurance, right? I mean, this is what we're facing, and we've been facing it for a long time. And the people who vote against their own interests, in some ways, I'll say in some ways, because of course, if you know, the systems of supremacy that benefit you are also, in your best interest, I guess. But the people who vote against having health care, right, there's a long history of them actually being the most harmed, because they're oftentimes the most, the numbers express that they are a dominant culture. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like when we were having the conversation before this person was caught and before we started digging into who he was, there was this interesting excitement on the left of like, is this the person? Is this kind of the energy where we just kill CEOs, right? I don't think that's going to happen now that we're recognizing who this actually is and maybe some of those deeper layers and also questioning reality to some degree or the reality we're being fed. Are you there, Abe?
Sorry, 503-231-8187. Minor technical difficulties over here. Yes, as we were discussing earlier in the program, at the root of this problem is the fact that health is commoditized in this country. And by and large, if you want to have it and preserve it by means of modern medicine, you have to pay for it. So enter the private health care industry. Now, let me rephrase that right off the bat. The health insurance industry. Health insurance is categorically different from health care, which is the thing that everybody needs. Health insurance, I would argue, is something that absolutely nobody needs. Now, let's look at this industry, shall we? This is an industry that fits Mr. Mangione's description of being a parasite. Let's think about this for a second. It does not improve the quality of healthcare. It does not improve the availability of healthcare. It does not act to drive down costs. It does not improve the efficacy of the care that is delivered. It does not encourage research into new and better forms of care. All it does is exist to siphon money off and position itself as a middleman between the people providing the care and the people who need it, sometimes desperately. So what does this mean? It means that every private health insurer makes a series of decisions each and every day about whether to allocate the funds necessary to pay for the care that people need. And this definitionally means that thousands of people in this country don't receive the care that they need and are faced to pay for, or forced to pay for it in some other fashion, raising the specter of medical bankruptcy, which exists only in this country among the advanced and wealthy nations of the world. Only in this country are you going to go bankrupt because of your medical bills. Now, United Healthcare, the company of which Mr. Thompson was the CEO, was worse than normal. They denied care on average at about twice the rate that is typical amongst the private health insurance industry. So literally, Mr. Thompson's decisions, or the decisions made by the people who work at United Healthcare, are responsible for the death and suffering of tens of thousands of Americans each and every year. Somehow, we don't call this murder, but the end result is the same. This industry is parasitical. It is a drain upon the body politic. It is a drain upon the citizenry. It needs to go. The only reason we still have it is because, as we have learned in many, many other aspects of social and economic life, people will fight harder to preserve privilege than they will fight for just about anything. So why do we continue to commoditize and profit from people's health in this country? Because the people who make the money want to keep it that way. Every attempt thus far to abolish this system has been met with refusal. Every attempt to mitigate this system, with a few exceptions, has been met with refusal. We have things like the Affordable Care Act, which, on the positive side of its balance sheet, has extended care to tens of millions of people who wouldn't have it otherwise. But it has preserved, at its core, the for-profit motive that drives the insurance industry. So all the best we can say about the Affordable Care Act, despite how popular it is now, finally, amongst the body politic, is that it's a little bit better than the situation we had before. So you get back to the question of, what do we have to say about Luigi Mangione? Is he a hero or is he a murderer? I think in the final analysis, the answer is he's a little bit of both. I have to say the obligatory thing here. I do not condone murder as a means of expressing one's political opinion or of exacting one's revenge. That is not an acceptable tool in a free society. On the other hand, I am not going to lose any sleep or shed a tear over the death of the CEO of United Healthcare, because he and all his contemporaries preside over a parasitic and predatory industry that only hurts their fellow Americans. So it's a strange sort of purgatory, Tracy, that we find ourselves in here, morally and ethically.
Absolutely. I think absolutely. And, you know, I think there was a lot of scolding and, you know, finger pointing and finger wagging from folks on the right who of course, assumed this person was some kind of radical leftist. You know, they like to use that and toss that around. And you are saying, you know, well, you know, liberal this and that is a sickness, and, you know, that's why we've got to, you know, quash this. No, it's just more of the same, right? You're continuing to stop the public consciousness from awakening to the ways in which we are being manipulated and exploited by moneyed interests. And, you know, it's just interesting to just hear that, you know, no one should be celebrating the death of another individual. Well, you know, I'm not going to tell someone who has been denied pre-existing conditions or who has experienced the kind of pain that, you know, what I'm being told as far as Luigi Mangione with his back surgery, People get radicalized by being in not healthy states, whether that's mental health, whether that's physical health, whether that's holistic health as a human being, right? Like, the reality is we have dental insurance, we have eye insurance, and then we have insurance for the rest of our bodies, as if these are separate entities, right? We have separate insurance or none at all for people's mental health, right? And of course, in this country, we continue to talk about houselessness and homelessness and blah, 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 blah. And it's all a matter of one's personal holistic health, right, that we are talking about. But once again, once we commodify those things and create a free market for those things that come with the exploitation of humans, we are in a lose-lose game.
Yeah, we absolutely are. The bottom line is we spend more than twice as much per capita on health care in this country as our peer countries do. And we have poorer outcomes across the board. Lower life expectancy, as we've already mentioned. Higher rates of chronic illness. Higher rates of infant mortality and maternal mortality. And the list goes on and on and on and on. And would you couple that with the fact that we are inclined in this country to be generally less healthy than people elsewhere in the world because of the highly industrialized food system that puts strange things into our bodies all the time. And in the moving through an environment that is less regulated in terms of pollutants than the rest of the industrialized world, we're already inclined to be sicker as a nation just because of our habits and the environment in which we live. So if you couple it with this predatory system, then you're setting yourself up for the sorts of substandard outcomes that we're talking about right here. Not to mention that the fact that most people in this country have health insurance at all because it's associated with their jobs. Generally, the better job you have, the better health coverage you're going to have. And who in this country historically has had a near monopoly on the best sorts of jobs? White people have. So by creating a for-profit health system, we exacerbate the existing class and racial divides that are so prevalent in our society. But in this case, they manifest themselves in poorer health outcomes, shorter lifespans, a lower standard of happiness. It's the most pernicious thing I could possibly imagine, Tracy. And when we talk about the efforts over the years to get rid of the system and replace it with a single player a system like you find in most parts of the wealthy world, it has been defeated each and every time. There is no justification for this system. And this is why we're seeing the outpouring, I don't want to say of sympathy for Mr. Mangione necessarily, nor do I want to say it's been an across-the-board endorsement of his methods, but certainly empathy with his anger, because so many people are feeling that very same anger themselves. I don't know. I don't know what's going to come from this. I don't know if we're going to see a rash of CEO killings. I kind of, like you said, tend to think not. But this has certainly provided an outlet for the sorts of feelings that people have obviously been fostering for a long, long time.
Yeah. It's been definitely growing. And I think what's interesting in this last election, we had, Donald Trump out there on the stump telling people he wanted to take all these things away. We had Kamala Harris basically saying she wanted to preserve the ACA, and she wanted to do these things to expand access and expand benefits for families, et cetera. And, right, it wasn't a leftist message, and people did not actually receive that message. So when I think about, Democrats and, even the Bernie bros, like, how do we shift back to a message that is an actual populist message? Because whatever is happening is not getting to the people. They are not receiving that message. And we can blame the racism, maybe. I'm not sure. But I do want to get back to that. Like, what is the actual messaging of people who actually want to see this change? And, I know there will be someone who calls and tells me about the Democrats and blah, blah, blah. I'm really not interested. I really want to talk about this specific thing that relates to healthcare and healthcare for all people without the burden of insurance and, you know, do I qualify and I'm not qualified, so then what do I do? This is not tenable. It hasn't been for a long time. Once again, Sicko, please, if you have not seen it, take some time, watch it. We're in the same space we were in 2007. It's insane. I just also wanted to name that the ratio of pay for employees to CEO at UnitedHealthcare, along with many other of the large health insurers, 352-1. So the CEO is getting paid 352 times that of the lowest paid employee. Oh, I mean, this is just, it's not, there's nothing that could describe that. Right, it's unimaginable.
Well,
but
he's
very real.
Got to make those very important decisions, like, you know, about which people to deny care to. He gets to decide, you know, how many people are going to die today because it's just too expensive to provide the care that they want. It boggles the mind. And when you hold up, I've had this forms of this conversation many, many times over the years. So you hold up another country as an example. Let's take Canada because they're right next door. And because Canada has been such a player in this conversation over the years, as we've witnessed the bizarre spectacle of busloads of senior citizens traveling across the border into Canada to obtain the prescription drugs there at some cost that approaches affordable, because here in the United States, they're just too damn expensive. So Canada is a useful figure in this conversation. The pushback I inevitably get from people on the right is, oh, well, you can't choose your own doctor in a single-payer system. Well, that's not true. You absolutely can choose your own doctor from a whole range of providers that exist in your area. The other pushback I get goes something like this. Well, you know, if you want to have any sort of elective procedure, you got to wait longer for it than you do in this country. Well, that's both true and false. Yeah, sometimes you might have to wait longer for an elective procedure in Canada than you do here. But at least you can get that procedure in Canada. You can only get it here, if you have the money, and B, if you have the insurance that is willing to pay for that procedure. Thirdly, I hear things like, well, what's the incentive for people to become doctors, whether it's general practitioners or specialists of some kind under a single-payer system? Well, physicians still enjoy positions of privilege in single-payer countries. They enjoy position, they are paid very well, and they are afforded all of the benefits we've associated in this country with somebody who goes into that line of work. You get a good paycheck, and you get the respect of your community. And the other thing I hear about is, well, you know, you just don't have any freedom. It takes away all your freedom. You can't shop around for the kind of care you want. Well, that is categorically false. Every procedure that is available to people in the United States is available to people in places like Canada and Britain and Sweden and Japan and Australia and on and on and on. The only difference is the government is the one who pays for it at the end of the day. And this is a much cheaper, much more efficient, much more egalitarian, much more universal form of care than the one we have developed here, which of course is dependent entirely upon a profiteering middleman that exists between the people who provide the care and the people who need it. So all of these arguments against a single payer system, all you have to do is scratch the surface. You don't have to go very deep to debunk them. The bottom line here is that you are more free, you are healthy, you are happier if you are a person who lives in a country with single payer health care than you are if you live someplace like the United States. And just to cap off this rant, Tracy, let's talk about the freedom that you get when your health care is no longer tied to your job. All of a sudden, you are free to quit a crappy job and go find a better one. Whereas in this situation that we have here in this country, you might feel trapped because your benefits are good. Maybe you've got a sick member of your family who depends on them. So you stay in a job that you hate, that crushes your soul, simply so that the people in your family can get the care that they need. A single-payer system gets rid of that. It gives you the freedom to seek out the employment that you want and also ensures that you still have health care because you're a human being who deserves to have health care. I'm a little bit inflamed about all this.
I see. I mean, I think we all should be. And so I want to get to Santiago on the line because we lost him and then came back. So, Santiago, jump in here. Good morning.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I was making sure. Something like this was bound to happen. I mean, at the end of the day, these healthcare providers, these insurance providers, they are parasites. They leech off the people. You know, they literally stand between doctors and their ability to provide care. You know, and this dude, Brian Thompson, literally, like, created or got a hold of some sort of AI technology that allowed him to deny claims while he was out golfing. You know, I mean, it's just, yeah, you know, like he, yeah, you know, the thing is, man, is it's like, you know, we, you know, it's, you know, the reason why people can hold those views about freedom and things like that for socialized healthcare is because, number one, we haven't really had it. You know, like, we get socialized health care once we're retirement age. But, you know, the other part of it is, too, is it just goes back to Red Scare propaganda. Because, you know, the reason why social democracies had to pop up the way they did in Europe is because they had the USSR right next door providing quality, free health care for all their citizens and non-citizens at that. You know, so they had, you know, it's just like how, like when the union comes in and raises wages on a place and they don't, and the places next door don't want to get unionized, so they raise their wages so people are happier. It's a very similar effect, you know. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's like we live in the most dystopian version of capitalism. And, you know, what I really find interesting about this is that this crosses class lines. This crosses class lines. This crosses political lines. You know, you have normally conservative people shouting down conservative commentators and conservative pundits in their comments sections and in person because, you know, they're realizing how out of touch the people they've been listening to are. I mean, it's actually really crazy, and it's actually pretty hopeful. I mean, you know, it's like Fidel Castro talked about. He's like, you know, war was not our first choice, but the government made it inevitable. And I mean, it's a bit, you know, and it's, you know, and that's the type of government that, you know, it's like the Bautista government was pretty awful in itself because it was a U.S. puppet, and the U.S. is much more brutal abroad than it is at home, at least until recently. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, this government, because it's bought and paid for by corporations that are on, and, you know, both parties are on the take, they will squash this out because they want their money. And, you know, and I just seen this anger and this rage, you know, we really, you know, as people who consider themselves conscious, we got to find a way to not only, like, grab a hold of this anger, but we got to make it bigger. Because if people can cross class lines over this, then there's a lot more that people have in common, but we cannot let the anger die down. You know, we got to make the anger bigger. We got to, you know, it's, you know, educate, organize, agitate, right? So, you know, and we can't rely on our politicians, you know, for the most part. I mean, with the very few handful of progressives who are actually on the side of the people, you know, it's going to be us that's going to do it. And, you know, we can't depend on any of the politicians in the, you know, that we have above us to be able to facilitate it because the bulk of them are on the take. They don't want to do it because it cuts into their ability to make money. So, I mean, I have no sympathy for this dude, you know, who got his in broad daylight because, you know, you think about how many people's families have been affected by this one dude's callous behavior. And it, you know, and it's like, I can see some sympathy for his family because, you know, it's like, you know, because his kids don't understand. But I hope that they grow up to understand that their father was an awful person. You know, you can't separate those things. You know, we have a culture that tries to separate politics from personality, or politics from how we treat people. But our politics are how we treat people. You know, there's no difference. You know, if you have somebody who's a Republican and somebody who's a Democrat, and they both want to crack down on the border, then they're both racists at the end of the day. You know, because border, you know, it's because that their politics are how they treat people, right? You can't separate them. So, I mean, it's anyway. I mean, I know it's a little bit of a rant there, but I mean, I'm excited to see the anger. I'm excited to see the anger, and we need to make the anger bigger. And it the anger is a weapon, and it needs to be pointed at the correct people, not trans people, not immigrants. You know, not queer folks. It needs to be pointed at the rich.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I agree. Make the anger bigger. Thank you.
Make the anger bigger. Yeah. Make
the anger bigger. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Chris, your thoughts?
I mean, I agree. I think anger can be a deeply impactful, motivating factor if we can get people to mobilize. And I think there was a lot of energy, right, around healthcare for all. I just think about what was done by the Democratic Party to shut that down, to make sure that Hillary got, nominated. And I think people are still reeling from that. Ultimately, though, I think anger does motivate, and it becomes a factor. But it can't just be disorganized. It can't be anger for anger's sake. It has to be anger for a purpose, to create something better for all of us. And I think about the book that I talk about pretty frequently. It's called The Sum of Us by Heather McGee. And in it, she talks about the fact that the reason we don't have nice things is because of racism. Everything to me seems to harken back to that. Because if you're getting something good and somebody else that you don't like isn't getting it, you might not want it yourself. And I think about the people who could benefit most from these systems, of course, rural folks, folks whose health is being impacted by climate change, by, of course, you know, all of the ills of our society, right, that continue to side with the very rich. And I think the anger could create class solidarity and move us to a different space as far as organizing and mobilizing some kind of different effort. I agree with Santiago on that.
Here, here. 503-231-8187. That's, you know, what you said just now and what Santiago said during his phone call, I think that really gets to the nut of this problem. Make the anger bitter, and bigger. I suppose it's already bitter. Make it bigger, and as Santiago said, make sure it's directed at the right people, not at folks of color, not at immigrants, not at queer folks, not at poor folks, but at the rich. And healthcare, I think, makes a particularly juicy target for this anger because, as we've so thoroughly established on this program, it is a parasitical tumor growing on the body politic of the United States. It exists for no other reason than to fatten itself and nurture its own growth. And it does this by doling out the things that people need to live healthy and happy lives. So there is no justification for this industry as it exists. It wields a stranglehold over not only the health of the people that it exists nominally to serve, but over the policymakers who have it in their power to replace it with something better. And again, we get back to the question, why don't we have a single-payer healthcare system in the United States of America? And the answer is the profits of the few have won out every single time over the healthcare of the many. Santiago also brought up the fact that, yeah, we finally do in this country, if you're lucky enough to live long enough to reach retirement age, you finally get to participate in a socialized single-payer medical system, which is Medicare. So we have the model here. We already have a single-payer system that exists in the country. We already have, we could take this and simply remove the age requirement and extend it to everyone. We also have the military, the biggest single bureaucracy in the federal government, all of whose members receive single-payer socialized medicine. They have done for decades. It has worked out
very, very well for them. Except, you know, once you're no longer active duty, and then the VA kind of lets you twist in the wind. But that's a story for another time. So we have an idea of what we need to do here. We have a model that works that we can expand to cover everyone. The only thing that we lack is the political will. And what is interfering with that political will? What is coagulating such that it stops this from happening? It's the profits of the few winning out over the health of the many. It is a maddening situation, and it's no wonder. It is no wonder that we're seeing this outpouring not only of anger on the part of many people who have struggled with the same issues that Mr. Mangione and his mother did, but the overall frustration of the inertia in this country, the fact that we can't seem to change it, despite the fact that it's so obviously a good idea. Not really sure where we take it from here.
I mean, I think it starts with organizing and also asking the questions. So, of course, Brian Thompson is one person, United Healthcare, making $10.2 million a year in 2024. But he was one of the lowest paid of the many high-paid CEOs of health insurance company. The CEO of Cigna Health, $21 million. WellCare, $23.5 million. Humana, $16.3 million. Centene Corporation, $18.6 million. Molina Healthcare, $21.4 million. CVS Health, $21.6 million. Elevance Health, $21.9 million. We're talking for one person's compensation. Over $23 million. It makes no sense. And we have become numb to these numbers because they are inconceivable. They don't make any sense in the real world of all people needing to have their health, right? You don't have much else if you don't have your health. And I'm always talking about health in a holistic way. So, I think it's the waking up, it's the getting mad, it's the being frustrated and angry and using that to move us towards something else, because this is not sustainable, right? Even if we just want to talk about the income inequality aspect of that, it's not sustainable, right? People who work in healthcare, and I'm thinking about home health workers, and I'm thinking about the CNAs and the people who do the everyday grunt work to make sure that you are getting what you need in that hospital environment, are making $10 and $15 an hour tops in some areas. We've got the CEOs making 23+ million. Make it make sense. Somebody, please.
The people who deny the care are paid far better than people who actually provide it. It's crazy making. Engineer Sonia asked a very pertinent question about CEO compensation. Compensation for what? They produce nothing of real use or value. That's absolutely true. United Healthcare is the fifth largest corporation in the world by market capitalization. They don't make anything. They don't develop anything. They don't conduct valuable research. All they do is serve as a blood-sucking intermediary. And the decisions they make result in the premature and often painful early deaths of millions and millions of people. There is no justification for this industry. It should not exist. The fact that it does is a moral outrage. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Let's go to Jimbo. Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, I've been a worker all my life, and I was involved in an industrial accident running a lumber mill, and I had a bunch of my fingers cut off. And this is just a short story. Now, we have the Safe Corporation, which is an authorized workers' comp carrier, but they're a private company who handled my claim. I was in the... in the hospital at Emanuel Hospital for a second surgery, and the social worker came in and told me I had to check out of the hospital. So I put my clothes on, and next thing I know, there's a puddle of blood on the floor, and the nurse had to come in and basically tourniquet the blood to stop it from bleeding. It was coming out of the hand wound. And I said to myself, now, who is it that authorized me to check out of this hospital? Was it the treating doctor? Oh, no, it was the social worker. And then she was going to send me to a flea bag motel that night to stay while I'm bleeding out. And then she reluctantly changed her decision. It was, oh, I think we'll leave you in the hospital one more night, sir. That's just a small story. I have many others about how SAFE has treated me, but that is just a social worker is deciding over the treating physician while I'm bleeding out that I have to leave the hospital.
Unbelievable. Well, I'm glad you made it through, and I presume that you're healthy now, and I'm grateful for that. But good Lord, I'm sorry. What a horrible thing to have to endure.
They deny my claim, and they won't make a prosthetic, and I can't find any work, and they won't pay me, and I'm living in my car, and I've worked all my life, and I just went to court to try to fight, and the judges won't help me, and they just deny, and they made me indigent. I'm 59 years old. I worked all my life, and I'm living in my car, and nobody will hire me because my left hand's all messed up.
Oh, man.
And I worked all my life. I grew up on a farm. I worked all my life.
I'm so sorry, Jimbo.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That's awful.
Well, thank you for hearing me. And I just think we got to shake this thing up all the way. Well, here's one other funny thing. As you know, on the record, what kind of speech was he going to make at that convention? And what's his claim processing history? Is there a legitimate necessity defense against the corporation to murder in this case under those circumstances?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the call. And
okay, and thank you for your program. And keep up your good work at KVU. Thank you.
Thank you. Really hope you can get what you need. That's... wow. Tracy, that's just horrible. I mean, what?
This is one story, of course, of someone, right? I mean, this is happening all the time to lots of people. I think about just even the idea of medical debt bankrupting someone and having them then houseless, and us complaining about the houseless people as opposed to complaining about the systems that allow for it, right? I mean, this is where we are. This is where we find ourselves in this moment. And it really is time for the people to rise up and say, no, we're not doing this anymore. We're not participating in our own death and demise because of our sickness.
503-231-8187. Let's go to Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Yes, hi, good morning. And stories like that and what you've been describing this morning can make us all feel not only frustrated but powerless. And ultimately, I think what's going to happen here in this new transition is for states to save costs by doing universal health care. And Oregon is going to have to step up, and the Oregon Health Authority. And that's where we can probably make a difference, is in statewide politics. And really, I mean, the last story is not only going to cost way more than if the person was insured, but probably more nationally and statewide. So the state can actually save costs, and the Oregon Health Authority has to start, improving their ethical delivery, and I think that's, without knowing much about it in terms of how the authority works, I think that's where we're going to have to put our energy.
Thank you very much for the call. There's been some efforts in recent years in the state of California to establish a statewide single-payer system here, or there, rather. At close to 50 million people, California certainly has the critical mass in terms of population. And also the wealth to make something like that effective. When you're talking about creating a single-payer system, it helps to have a lot of folks. It helps to have a rich, developed economy to help fund all of this stuff. Something we might be able to do here in Oregon, but with a smaller population base, I think it would be a bit of a heavier lift. But Tracy, I don't see any reason why we couldn't have, for example, like a West Coast states single-payer compact sort of situation, where residents of Oregon, Washington, and California are able to participate in the same pool of single-payer health coverage. I think the caller is absolutely right. These are the sorts of solutions I think we're going to have to look for, because the will is not there at the federal level to do this yet.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this is also the challenge, right? Are those governors, are those state legislatures, are those people, because there's always going to be structures over and underlaying all of this, as well as the corporations themselves, because right now, moving from a corporate monetized system to a more equitable and fair system really means dismantling the system that currently exists, and they are going to resist that tooth and nail. We have in Oregon, the Oregon Health Plan, and I've known people who have had to use that. It also has challenges, right? All of these systems have challenges. How do we create a better system? How do we dismantle the one that currently exists? I feel like there are really smart people who should be on this right now. And those of us who know less about the details, but more about what we need as a society, should be real loud in this moment. Real loud.
Yeah, we absolutely should. I would imagine that somebody out there has thought this through. And there is a plan, does exist, to transition the United States from a for-profit healthcare insurance situation to a single-payer national universal system. I imagine that work has been done. Again, I think the failing here is one of will. As Santiago pointed out, when both major parties are on the take from members of the health insurance industry, the probability of ever replacing that system with something else approaches zero. And I've even heard this argument. What about all the people who are employed by the for-profit health insurance industry? What are we going to do with them if we transition to single payer? Well, I don't know, but I imagine if we muster the will to change the system, we can probably figure out a way to make sure that those people have a nice soft landing. And I'm not talking about the people at the top of that particular pyramid, the CEOs of United Health and elsewhere. I'm sure they have nice big silk parachutes with which to make their own soft landings. But let's not let the enormity of this task dissuade us. It's something that has to happen. We can't continue like this. We just simply can't. 503-231-8187. Do you have anything to say, Tracy, before we go back to the phones?
Oh, I want to hear from callers.
All right, let's hear from Brad. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I've been listening. This is a really good conversation. And I just wanted to chime in a little bit. I think people might get more angry or be based on fear, especially if the law through legislation would force the insurance companies to divulge their proprietary algorithms for how much they pay. And in essence, how many percentage of people have to die. And that's part of the actuarial calculations. And also the fact that they're going into these stochastic parrots called AI for making these decisions on who dies and who doesn't. That might really piss people off if someone would organize around legislation that would require the algorithms to be public knowledge. At least that would be a start, I think. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I can't argue with any of that. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. What about this, Tracy? What about if we created a huge open public space where all the people right now making the decisions about who to deny care to had to do so in the full view of everybody? Had to pronounce those names out loud and describe the reason for denying the care. Let's just bring it all out into the sunshine. If this is what's going to happen, then you got to do it in front of everybody.
I mean, I think this is a challenge, right? What's interesting is in the aftermath, I'll say that with air quotes, of this murder of this Brian Thompson, UnitedHealthcare CEO, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield reverses a decision that they had put in place to put a time limit on anesthesia. Now, the time limit on anesthesia looked like this, right? People get into surgery. They need anesthesia. Anesthesiologists and the medications to keep someone sedated for a surgery is very expensive. Anesthesiologists are up there with cardiologists as far as their pay in the spectrum of pay of medical professionals. And so to save money, of course, cut costs so that those CEOs can make, $23 million per year, they made a decision to implement a time limit on the amount of anesthesia and the anesthesiologist services that any patient would get for a surgery. So say there was a complication of a surgery, your time's run out, no more anesthesia for you, we're going to just go ahead and sew you back up and get you out here. But within days of that shooting, that decision was reversed. Will this be at all a ripple for other kinds of decisions like those that these very greedy people are making? I don't know. I hope it really is, because this cost cutting really has impacts on people's lives. And I did want to name that what's interesting about all of this is when a person dies from medical neglect and being denied care and being denied a claim, or dies in their car because they no longer have gainful employment, or they take their own lives because of despair and just not feeling like they can keep going, we don't call it murder, but we call this one a murder of the CEO.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same for the police, right? When police kill someone, we don't call it a murder, but we do call it murder when it's someone who doesn't have as much power. And I'm continuing to want to poke at that, because there's something underlying there that is gross, something that we've accepted and normalized as a society and become pretty apathetic to. And I think that needs a lot of our anger as well.
Yeah. Brian Thompson was a mass murderer. He didn't pull the trigger himself, but he presided over an organization where decisions about the future of people's lives were being made in an incredibly cavalier fashion. And he took that money and he went to the bank with it. He is a mass murderer. So is everybody who's in a similar position at similar corporations throughout this horrible sclerotic system. You're right. We don't call it murder for some reason, when it happens at a distance like this, when the people who preside over it are well-heeled, when they have titles like CEO, when they do things like go to address shareholder meetings. But they pocket the money, and they take it to the bank, and people die. Or people live lives of prolonged misery because they're unable to receive the care that they need to deal with their chronic pain or their chronic illness or whatever it is. It's murder. And I think the sooner we're able to get our heads around this and start calling it what it is, the sooner we're going to be able to make this anger bigger, as Santiago pointed out, and make sure that it's pointed in the right direction. This industry has to go. There's just no two ways about it. It has no place in a society that purports to be compassionate and purports to embrace values like freedom. And finally, let's not forget, what is the recourse for somebody who has no health insurance, who has a debilitating or chronic condition and can't get the care, get the treatment that they need? Ultimately, many of them end up in the emergency room when things get so bad that they have no other alternative. And then that care that is provided to them at that moment of extremity is the most expensive care that exists, and that bill ends up being footed by the taxpayers. So this comes home to roost in the end. We all end up paying for this in the end. But we do so in such an expensive and tragic way that exposes the bankruptcy of the entire system. There has got to be a better way than this. And there is. We see it all around the world, everywhere but here.
And that's all. That's all I have to say about it.
Thank you, Abe. I did want to name that Gail Boudreau, who made that decision to reverse this, new policy on time-limiting anesthesiologists, was formerly in the position that Brian Thompson died in as CEO of UnitedHealthcare. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, y'all. It is a few people doing a lot of harm and continuing to have us punching left and right at each other when we should be punching up. We don't have a lot of time. What I wanted to say is we are still doing the KBOO drive. We need lots of money to make sure that this organization continues to bring you unfiltered, uncorporate news, good discussion, encourage you to, invite other folks to listen and become a member of KBOO. We really do need your support to be able to bring you quality programming and continue really raising the consciousness within our locus of control. So thank you so much for listening. I'll turn it over to you to send us out, Abe. What?
Looks like it's all you and, maybe us. Oh, okay. Oh, no. Oh, they're both out. Well, I've been asked to take us out. Well, that's it for another edition of quite possibly one of the best weekly social and political talk shows on the air, which you find only on your community radio, KBOO Portland. Doing our year-end catalog of connections themed fund driving.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO's 20